Of course, this song was written by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Prabhupada introduced it at a pandal in where, Ahmedabad or someplace, and it became the song that we sing always before Bhagavatam class. It's actually a very intimate song describing Krishna with Radharani, the gopis, and the other Brijbasis, and their intimate relationships with him. It's obvious to us, self-evident, that Bhaktivinoda Thakur was a participant in this intimate, loving relationship with Krishna of the Brijbasis, that he was a very intimate, eternal associate of Krishna and of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Of course, Krishna appeared thousands of years ago, way before our time. He came again as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, also quite a bit before our own time, 500 years ago, in the time of Christopher Columbus and others. It's old history. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is still sending his eternal associates into this world. And quite recently, not that any of us was alive during this time, but we have access to Bhaktivinoda Thakur in a way we don't have access to previous acharyas. He spoke in our language. He spoke to the modern world. Not only that, he spoke in English language sometimes, and in other vernacular languages of India. He preached in Hindi, in Orissan, in Bengali, in Assami. I don't know what other languages. He wrote songs in all these languages, wrote books. So he was available. He communicated to a wide audience, to people in our own time, and he's still very relevant. The vision, the plans that he conceived in his heart are still just being established. And it is all the vision of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. It's Krishna's vision, but it takes the great soul to carry the vision of the Supreme Lord into concrete reality in the material world. The vision of Krishna is that he's for everybody, for all times and all people. That Krishna consciousness is not just something of the past, and it's not just something for Indians only. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is not just for the Bengalis. And therefore, it's the desire, the intention of Krishna, of Lord Chaitanya, that Krishna consciousness be spread throughout the whole world in modern times, in this urgent times that we're living in, when more than ever, this culture needs to be introduced to save the world from chaos. So it's very much the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that he sent Bhaktivinoda Thakur back into the world. To deliver us and to establish the modern Krishna consciousness movement. This special activity of translating Krishna consciousness into different languages and to different cultures is not something that was never done before in the line of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Lord Chaitanya himself, in effect, translated Krishna consciousness into modern terms by his practical teaching. And he was Bengali, and he spoke the vernacular language and preached in it. So he was relevant to his modern times. He was doing the same thing, delivering Krishna consciousness to the particular place and time and the particular culture. Rupa and Sanatan, the other Goswamis, they were empowered by Lord Chaitanya to further this work, to establish Krishna consciousness in a concrete form for the modern age. And in later generations, this was done repeatedly. We have the example of Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, who in the 17th century was confronting a steady decay of Brahminical culture and of Vaishnav culture. And he dealt with that by a special kind of preaching. Some of his books are very difficult and elevated scholarly works, but he also wrote simpler books in simple Sanskrit, because people, the level of Sanskrit education was diminishing, and it was harder and harder for the young students to understand the original books of the Goswamis. So he wrote simple explanations, short books, in simple Sanskrit language. This is, again, adapting and translating, presenting for the modern times. But that was back in the 17th century. Nowadays, hardly anybody in the world can read even simple Sanskrit. And it all has to be retranslated. Because we received Krishna consciousness from Srila Prabhupada. He spoke in English, mostly. He presented us the Bhagavatam, the Gita and the Bhagavatam, and the whole science of Krishna consciousness in our own language, and in such a way that we could grasp the ideas, presented them clearly and simply. But that, Prabhupada was only carrying out the mission established by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. What Prabhupada did was all envisioned by Srila Bhaktivinoda. He didn't have the opportunity in his own life to carry out his intentions. By Krishna's arrangement, he was restricted by obligations, by poor health that bothered him most of his life. He was a very responsible family man and government servant. So he never was able to write a translation and commentary of Srimad Bhagavatam himself. That he left for his son. And for Srila Prabhupada to do it in English. So his work was mostly foundational, setting the pattern, revealing the plan, which was fulfilled by his son Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and Srila Prabhupada. He was born in, I think, 1837 from a Bengali aristocratic family. But because his family owned land in Orissa, I think in the Chota Nagpur district, he was born in Orissa, even though he's from Bengali stock. He was born in a time when India was completely under the control of the British, or was coming almost completely under control. By then, 1837, the British had pretty much taken over the whole country. And even worse than the tyranny of the Mughals, the British wanted to culturally dominate India, wanted to obliterate what was left of the Vedic culture and replace it with European culture. They were not satisfied just with power and with the ability to extract wealth from the conquered country. They wanted to convert the heathens to modern culture. And they were very practical at the way they went about it. If a ambitious young person wanted to have a good career, it was required for him to get involved with the British one way for an Indian to get advanced under the British subjugation was to enter the civil service or get work for the British government. To do that, you had to have an English education. So by that enticement, the British were weaning the most intelligent people away from the Vedic culture. Instead of getting traditional education, they went to the British established schools to get Western education so they could get a good job. And also, this prejudice was being successfully inculcated among the more well-to-do and more educated classes, that their own culture was inferior and they should themselves become like Europeans. Bhaktivinoda Thakur was born in that climate and he had to deal with it. He himself got a very strong Western education. He was very fluent in English and very well read in philosophy and literature, and he associated with the intellectuals of Bengal who had been strongly influenced by the Westerners. Bengal is a very intellectual, literary province. In the certain parts of India, the upper classes are involved mostly in making money. But in Bengal, literature, philosophy, intellectual pursuits are still, even nowadays, still very prominent, unlike some other parts of India. You go to Bombay, there's only a few good bookstores in Bombay. But in Calcutta, there's so much opportunity to find good books, including old Sanskrit books. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur grew up in this sophisticated intellectual culture. And as he grew up, as he himself was educated and knew English and was well-read, he, in Calcutta and elsewhere, he associated with many of the most prominent religious leaders and intellectuals, poets, scholars, and he imbibed those ideas. He became very well familiar with the current Western culture. This equipped him to become a very effective preacher. This was what was appropriate. Like our own Srila Prabhupada, he became a businessman, an organizer. But that's what was required to establish ISKCON. ISKCON needed to be organized. The devotees needed to be engaged in a systematic organization. And no, it took a manager, and Prabhupada was the supreme manager, and his upbringing, his earlier life, prepared him for that. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur's early life prepared him for the future work. In his pastimes, it appeared that he became Westernized, even that he was interested in Western religion and philosophy, seriously interested. But this is all just external. He's an eternal associate of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. At that time, the Bhagavatam was not being properly taught, and the Chaitanya Charitamrita, even in Bengal, was not even available. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, when he was about 40 years old, and he was turning his attention toward the teachings of Lord Chaitanya and becoming very, very interested in that, he wanted to read the Chaitanya Charitamrita and couldn't locate a copy. He had to go to great efforts to even find a copy of Chaitanya Charitamrita. But he did, and he reinstated himself externally. Internally, never lost it, but externally, he reinstated himself as a representative of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He, in a few years of studying and bhajan and association with Vaishnavas, became himself a very prominent acharya. He was, even from his youth, writing books. But now he was writing books just about the pure teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. This is about his, the 40th year in his life, around that time. He studied Sanskrit on his own, engaging a few pundits. Studied very intensely. And in a couple of years, he became expert enough that he could write in Sanskrit. And he wrote books in Sanskrit. But he wrote targeting the actual audience that was before him. The westernized Indians. And he also wanted to give Krishna consciousness to the rest of the world. Therefore, he wrote books in English. He sent those books to certain libraries in America and England and Canada. And he envisioned Krishna consciousness attracting good people from all over the world. He had that vision. He had his home in Swarup Ganja, on the other side of the Jalangi from our ISKCON property. And on the porch of his patio of his house, he looked over the river and saw one day a huge golden city. Had this vision. He actually envisioned the rise of Sridhar Mayapur. He rediscovered the location of Mayapur. The self-interested, so-called representatives of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu were insisting that Navadvip was the birthplace of Mahaprabhu. They had their temples there. They had their business of attracting donations and followers based on it all being centered in Navadvip city. Bhaktivinoda Thakur was convinced that it wasn't, that the actual birthplace of Lord Chaitanya was not exactly in that city. And he did extensive research and questioned people who had been in the area for a long time, old residents, and got information that actually the location is where it is where we know it to be now, on Turdweep. And he engaged his Shiksha Guru, Jagannath Das Babaji, in confirming that this is the actual birthplace of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That caused a great controversy. Even his own guru had to, in effect, reject him, his own Diksha Guru, for insisting that the birthplace of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was somewhere else than Navadvip city. Such a controversy. It's going on still, at least in that area. But he had the vision that in this place, Sridhar Mayapur, in the future, people will come from countries all over the world, from Germany, America, Russia, to come together to sing the glories of Lord Sachinandana. And he began the development of Sridhar Mayapur, founding an ashram there that is still there at the location of the Chaitanya Math, and practically a whole spiritual city. That was, at least the work was begun by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And he prayed to Krishna to send a helper, an empowered devotee of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and that person came in the form of his 10th son, or one of his sons, Bimala Prasad, or Bhaktivinoda Sananda Saraswati Thakur, who carried out his mission. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati spread Krishna consciousness all over India and even outside of India, sent disciples outside. And he told several of his disciples, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, to go to the West, and preach Krishna consciousness in the English language. He told it to many, to several, and one of them actually did it and established ISKCON. This is all the execution of the vision of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, that we are sitting here worshipping Krishna, hearing the Bhagavatam, and glorifying this great devotee of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Okay. Can we share the microphone? Madan Mohan Prabhu, could you say something?
Maybe I can just read the little passage from Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's commentary on Amrita Pravaha Bhashya, on his commentary on Chaitanya Charitamrita. There he expresses his gratitude to his initiating spiritual master. He says, the eminent Bipin Bihari Prabhu, who is the manifestation of the transcendental energy of Lord Hari, who sports in the forests of Raja, has descended in the form of the spiritual preceptor. Seeing me in the dark well of worldly existence, he has delivered this humble servant of his. Even though there are still disputes among Vaishnavas as to the spiritual status of Bipin Bihari Goswami, because on a certain occasion, even Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur chastised him as a little boy. He told him that he was not qualified to put his foot on the head of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and he challenged him, "You don't know who my father really is." Still, following Vaishnava etiquette, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur gave all credit for his own, as you have just explained, that he reinstated himself as an eternal associate of Lord Chaitanya. But following Vaishnava etiquette and proper behavior towards spiritual master, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur always was very respectful to his Diksha Guru and never challenged his position. And moreover, he externally manifested himself as such a great Vaishnavacharya only after he received initiation. In other words, as if he was showing by his own example that even if you are a Mahabhagavata, even if you are an eternal associate of the Lord, you have to go along the standard procedure and take shelter of the standard principles of devotional service. He wrote a short but very deep and philosophical, very important essay called Vipancha Samskara, where he delineated and explained five principles of Diksha, starting from Tapa, then Urdhapundra, Nama, Mantra, and Yaga. And although these principles had been known to people around that time, but Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur gave them an entirely different, very deep philosophical understanding, internal understanding. He said that these principles are to be followed not just externally, not by accepting external signs of an initiated devotee, by accepting a spiritual master externally, accepting Urdhapundra, the markings, and other things. But he showed and he demonstrated how these five stages have to be accompanied by five very profound internal changes. First person had to, tapa means literally branding the body with different signs of Vishnu, but he said that instead of branding with the red hot, how do you call them, prints of the body, the chakra and the gada, as it's still customary in some Vaishnava sampradayas, he said we should brand our soul, our heart with deepest repentance. That's how he explained tapa. And he said, without this repentance, the future stages of devotional service are not going to be effective. We have to repent for our years spent uselessly in material pursuits, and we have to present ourselves as such, repentant and desperate to our spiritual master. And then that's the strongest foundation in future devotional life. And then he says, Urdhva Pundra, we have to hear from the spiritual master about the path leading towards, what's it, Urdhva Gacchanti Sattvastana, the people who are situated in transcendental goodness have to go all the way above to the supreme destination, Goloka Vrindavan. We have to hear about our spiritual master, how to always go up, always go towards the highest goal. And then Nama, we have to change our identification instead of calling ourselves material names. Well, some of us, even though born in non-devotional, some of us were fortunate enough to receive spiritual names right from the very beginning of our birth, but most of us were not. So when we get initiation, we get a name which is related to the spiritual reality. Now we identify ourselves as dasis and dasis, such and such dasis and such dasi. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur once again reminds us, it's not just the name, it has to be our deep nature. We have to start thinking ourselves, identifying ourselves internally as servants of Krishna, and lose gradually all other interests. And then he goes on to explain. So, and at the end of the book, or the essay, he says that unless one goes through all these five processes of devotional, of pancha samskara, of pancha ratrika vidhi, one's bhajan will not be spontaneous, and he will not be able to feel the ecstasy of devotional service. Even though he may be Mahabhagavata, he says, he still, for the sake of other people, he goes through these standard processes of pancharatrika vidhi in order to teach others how it's important to follow them. So he himself was a very avid and very the best example of these principles, as he showed in this short passage which I have just read from Amrita Pravaha Bhasha. Even though Bipin Bihari Goswami might not have been qualified to be, I mean, in essence, as his Diksha Guru, due to his different spiritual status, still Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in order to teach others, accepted such a humble position, and he would always glorify his spiritual master as the source of Krishna's mercy in his life. So that's a very important principle for us to follow, that gratitude to the spiritual master is a very foundational principle of devotional service. Without that gratitude, Krishna will never be happy and will never be impressed with whatever external results we may attain in our devotional service. This is one thing which inspires me a lot in Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's personality. Sorry.
I don't have any pastimes in particular that come to mind, but just some. Whenever I think of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, there's always an amazing appreciation of how much he was able to accomplish in the second half of his life. He was so prolific in all regards. We know the size of his family was at least 15 or 20 members. And while he would work as a judge and maintain them, it would only take him a few hours. And then we see his daily schedule. It's actually printed and it's actually available. And you see it's like, you have it here? Oh. Here we go. I can read it out. Just to give you an idea. 7:30 to 8 p.m., he would take rest, and then at 10 p.m., he would rise and start writing. So it was 2 hours rest. And he'd write all the way up until 4 a.m., so 6 hours of writing in the middle of the night. Then he'd take rest for half an hour, and rise again at 4:30 a.m., wash hands and face, and chant japa until 7. And then he'd write letters. 7:30, he'd read for an hour, and then at 8:30, he'd receive guests or continue to read. 9:30 to 9:45, in other words, 15 minutes, he'd take a little rest. 9:45, take morning bath, breakfast of a half-quart milk, a couple of chapatis and fruit. 9:55, go to court in carriage. He would wear a coat and pants to court with double-sized tulsi neck beads and tilak. He was very strong in his decisions. He would decide immediately he did not allow any humbug in his court. No upstart could stand before him. He would shave his head monthly. He never allowed harmonium and he never had any debts. I guess it's a bit more Western. And different people have different preferences. Okay, 10 o'clock. Court began and 1 o'clock court finished. Then he'd come home and bathe and refresh. 2 p.m. he'd return to office. 5 p.m. he'd come back again and translate works from Sanskrit to Bengali. Then take evening bath and meal of rice, couple of chapatis, and half quart of milk. So you'd see, like, 6 hours he'd translate in the night, and then 3 hours in the afternoon he'd translate from... So 6 hours he'd write his own original books in the night, and then 3 hours he would translate from Sanskrit to Bengali in the afternoon. So the impression that you get when you read Bhaktivinoda Thakur's books like Chaitanya Shikshamrita and Jaiva Dharma is that he's really taken everything, actually literally every single book of the Goswamis, and condensed it and put it in a very understandable way in his own books. Sometimes in the forms of questions and answers, like in Jaiva Dharma, somebody's asking a question, somebody's giving an answer. He makes it very accessible, and he tackles many difficult questions also. He's not afraid to take them on. So one of the best ways to access the Goswami's books is actually through Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He's pre-digested it for everybody, and he made a lot of it available in Bengali and Sanskrit, so... Because not everybody could... Sorry, in Bengali and English, because not everybody could learn Sanskrit at that time. So... Yeah, like this. I mean, he must have written about 20 or more of his own original books. Huh? Is it 100, is it? Wow. Okay, yeah. Different sizes, yeah. So that's what impresses me about Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Even though he had such a big family to maintain, and even though he had like poor health in the last half of his life, he still was so prolific in his devotional achievements. He was obviously totally empowered. So maybe if somebody has some pastimes. Savagat, do you have something to say?
Hare Krishna. I was in Mayapur this year, and I especially wanted to go to Bhaktivinoda Thakur's place, Svananda Sukhanda Kunja. It is his home, and actually it's very, very, very special place, Svananda Sukhanda Kunja. It's a place where Nityananda Prabhu himself, he started this Namahata movement. He was spreading this mission of Lord Chaitanya. He went to masses, to say. So, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he wrote this song about marketplace of holy name, how Lord Nityananda, he is distributing holy name to everyone, how he is giving Krishna consciousness to different kinds of people. So, and I was very impressed by his mood to give Krishna consciousness to everyone, and he himself, he showed very perfect example how being grihastha householder, being engaged in so many duties, one can preach Krishna consciousness. He established about 500 namahatas himself, and he was he established very, very strong study of shastras in those namahatas. He put it in the very, very foundation that everyone has to have a very strong understanding of what Krishna consciousness is. And in this mood, in this right, correct understanding, one should chant holy name. one of parts of his daily schedule was that he has this balcony on his home, and he was just walking for about half an hour, 45 minutes, 1 hour, and he was just thinking, meditating, how he can spread Krishna consciousness. Every day he was doing it as his daily schedule. So, and I was very impressed by his mood of preaching, that he had such a strong desire to give Krishna consciousness to everyone. And because of this desire, he wrote so many books in order to establish philosophy of Krishna consciousness for us. Like Matsyatara Prabhu, he told that he was able to transfer this very high knowledge, so that it could be understandable. And he wrote books on not only in Sanskrit, in English, but he wrote so many songs in simple Bengali, so that simple people could understand it. So I was very, very impressed by his desire to give Krishna consciousness to everyone. Just, it's a sign of very, like in the case of Prahlada Maharaja, he was praying that he doesn't want to go to the spiritual world until those people who are suffering here in this world continue to suffer. He wanted to deliver them. So in the same way, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he had this very strong desire to give Krishna consciousness to us. And because of that desire, we can practice Krishna consciousness, like Prabhuji told, that we are very much obliged to him in having this opportunity to chant holy name, to practice Krishna consciousness, because otherwise we wouldn't have this chance.
I have a poem written by Bhakti Rakshaka Sridhar Maharaj. It is called, actually it's particularly for this day, because it is called Srimad Bhaktivinoda Viraha Dashakam, which he wrote actually himself in 1934 on that day. And yeah, I'll just read it out and, with Sanskrit. It's very wonderful poetry. Haha Bhaktivinoda Thakura Guru Dvavingshatiste Sama Dirgha Dukkha Bharad Ashesha Virahad Dusti Krita Bhuriyam Jivanam Bahujanma Punya Nivaha Krishto Mahi Mandale Avirbhava Kripam Chakara Cha Bhavan Sri Gaura Shakti Swayam. Alas, alas, O Bhaktivinoda Thakura, O spiritual master, for 22 years this world had been plunged into misfortune, grief-stricken in your long and intolerable separation. The divine potency of Sri Gaura, you graciously made your advent in this earthly plane, being attracted by the living beings, virtuous deeds accumulated for many lifetimes. Dinoham chiradushkritir nahi bhavat padabjadhuli kana snananda nidhing prapanna shubhadang labdhung sangartho bhavan. Kintvaudarya guna tavati yashasah karunya shakti svayam Sri Sri Gaura Mahaprabho prakatita Vishwang samanva grahit. Since I am lowly and wretched from time immemorial, it was definitely not my fortune to reach the ocean that bestows all auspiciousness upon the surrendered, the ocean of bliss, from bathing in particles of dust at your lotus feet. Yet out of your magnanimous nature, the mercy potency of the supreme glorious Sri Gauranga Mahaprabhu revealed itself and blessed the whole world. Probably he refers here to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur as that mercy potency. He Deva stavane tavakila gunanam te virincha dayo Deva vyarthamano ratha kimuvayam martyadhama kurmahe etan no vibudhai kada petishaya alankara ityuchyatam Shastreshveva naparayehamiti yad gitam mukundena tat. O Lord, even the demigods, headed by Lord Brahma, feel frustrated in their attempts to glorify all of your divine qualities. What then can a fallen human being like me accomplish in this matter? And may the scholars never say that this statement is a rhetorical exaggeration only, since Naparayeham is what was sung even in the scripture by Lord Mukunda. Dharmas charmagato gateva satata yogas chebhoga atmako jnane shunyagatir japena tapasa kyatir jighansa ivacha dane dambhigata anuraga bhajane dushtapacharo yada buddhin buddhimatang vibheda hitada dhatra bhavan preshitaha. When religion degraded to the bodily platform and nations prevailed, when yoga practice was mistaken as essential pleasure and knowledge was considered to culminate in voidism, when japa was performed for the sake of fame and penance out of vindictiveness, when charity was given to increase one's pride and on the pretext of spontaneous devotion, the most gross sinful acts were perpetrated. And among such adversities, when even the intelligentsia were at loggerheads with one another, you were sent by the Almighty. Vishvesmin kiranair yatha himakarah sanjivayan oshadhir nakshatrani charanjayan nijasudham vistarayan rajate satchastrani chatoshayan budhaganam sammodayan ste tatha nunam bhumitale shubhodaya itihlado bahusatvatam. As the cooling moon shines in this world by diffusing its nectarian rays, thus nourishing the plants and delighting the stars, similarly, your all-auspicious advent in this world, bringing pleasure to the devotional scriptures and blessing the learned or the demigods with full-blown happiness, is the cause for boundless joy of the pure devotees. Lokanam hitakamyaya bhagavato bhakti pracharastvaya granthanam rachanai satang abhimatair nana vidhair darshitaha acharya krita purvameva kilatat ramanujadair budhai premambho nidhi vigrahasya bhavato mahatmya sima natat. Desiring to benefit the whole world, you have demonstrated preaching of pure devotional service unto the Supreme Lord by writing books and in many other ways recognized by the pure devotees. The wise acharyas like Ramanuja have already accomplished this even before, but the limit of your glory does not end here. You are the embodiment of the ocean of prema. Yaddhamna kaludhama chaiva nigame brahmeti sangyayate yasyangshasya kalaiva dukkha nikarair yogeshwarair mrigyate vaikunthe paramukta bhringacharano narayano yasvayam tasyang shi bhagavan svayang rasavapuk krishno bhavan tatprada. Merely the effulgence of his divine abode is known by the word Brahman in the Vedas, and what is sought after with great tribulation by the foremost yogis is only the plenary portion of his expansion. He is the original Supreme Lord himself, the primeval origin of Lord Narayana in Vaikuntha, whose lotus feet the most exalted of liberated souls surround like bumblebees. He is Krishna, the personification of all nectarian mellows, and he is the one you bestow. Sarvachintyamaye paratparapure goloka vrindavane chillila rasarangini parivrita saradhika shri hare vatsalyadi rasaischa sevita tanor madhurya seva sukham nityam yatra mudata notihi bhavan taddhama seva pradaha. It is absolutely inconceivable highest abode of the spiritual sky known as Goloka Vrindavana, Srimati Radhika, surrounded by her associates, rejoices in the mellows of divine pastimes. With great ecstasy she expands the joy of sweet conjugal service to Sri Krishna, who is otherwise served in relationships such as parenthood. You, O Thakur Bhaktivinod, award us the service of that holy dhamma. Shri Gauranu, and I think now is actually the most wonderful verse of all the Ashtaka goes. Shri Gauranu matam svarupa viditam rupa grajenadritam rupa dev pariveshitam raghuganair asvaditam sevitam jivadir abhirakshitam shukashiva brahmadi sammanitam Shri Radha padaseva namritam aho taddatum isho bhavan. That which is enjoyed by Lord Gaura is realized by Swarupa Damodar and adored by Sri Sanatana Goswami. That which is distributed by the devotees headed by Rupa Goswami and relished and served by the associates of Raghunath Das Goswami. that which is carefully protected by the acharyas such as Jiva Goswami and revered by the personalities like Shukadeva, Shiva and Brahma. That is the nectar of loving service to the feet of Sri Radha, and you have the power to grant it. Kvaham mandamatistvativa patita kva tvam jagat pavana bho swamin kripaya paradha nichayo nunam tvaya kshamyatam yacheham karunanidhe varamimam padabjamule bhavat sarvasvavadhiradika dajitadasanam gane ganyatam. What is my position, who is so dull and extremely fallen? And what is yours, who are so great a soul delivering the world? O Master, please kindly forgive the heaps of my offenses. Ocean of mercy, at your lotus feet I beg for the benediction to be counted among the beloved servants of Sri Radha. Or another meaning, to be counted among the beloved servants of Sri Varshabhana Vidaita Dasa, for whom you are all that be. That's the poem.
Ukunda Maharaj remembered that when he was in Canada, about 1969, I think, or 1968, at that time, he just occurred on him to go to that library and try to find that book. I think it was about that time, if I'm not mistaken. No, maybe it's a bit later, sorry. Anyway, he went there and he started looking up the catalog, trying to find it by the name of the author. So he was start looking under Bhaktivinoda Thakur, so he couldn't find any. And he was just about to give up, but then it just occurred on him to look under Kedarnath. He looked up and he found that book. It was still there some 100 years ago. And interestingly, that the time when he sent, the year when he sent that book coincides with Srila Prabhupada's appearance, as if Srila Prabhupada came as a personification of the desire of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur to preach in the modern world. In 1896. Prabhupada, I just found a little piece of Bhaktivinoda Thakur's instruction from... would you mind if I read it? It's printed in Madhavananda Prabhu's Krishna Kathamrita Bindu. And there is a instruction from Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur Chaitanya Shikshamrita from English translation by Srila Banu Maharaj, unpublished manuscripts. And he's talking about miserliness here. Miserliness. So he says, miserliness is very contaminating for the devotee. There is miserliness of behavior, miserliness of wealth, and miserliness of effort. When dealing with the Vaishnava, the devotee should stand up when he approaches and care for him attentively. He should give general respect and gifts to the Brahmins. He should properly clothe and shelter his dependents. He should take items from others for a suitable price. In other words, sometimes devotees are trying to snatch things without paying proper price. He says, a devotee should take items from others for a suitable price. He should pay taxes to the king. He should show gratitude to benefactors, give food to the poor, medicine to the sick, and cloth to those suffering from cold weather. If he treats everyone in the world properly, then the fault of miserliness will not arise. It is even enough if, having nothing else, he simply speaks nicely. By proper speech, by wealth, and by his own labor, he should behave generously with others. Lack of proper behavior is forbidden for the devotee. It's interesting. Sometimes Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, how he incorporates this proper behavior into otherwise transcendental behavior for Vaishnava. He shows the connection between the two. Because somehow, at least in the West, those people like myself who haven't been fortunate to be brought up in proper culture, somehow we may have that dichotomy of transcendental behavior for Krishna and material behavior for people, and sometimes we just despise or neglect the latter. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur never did that, and he always combined, and he showed how even proper behavior towards people in general, or to speak of Vaishnavas, is a very important part of Vaishnava's behavior, and it's actually related to our spiritual progress. In other words, the way we behave with everybody has its effect on our devotional progress, devotional life. Sakale samana korite shakati deho natha jatha jatha Tabito Gaiba Harinama Sukhya Aparandaha Bihati. He says that, please give me, O my spiritual master, the strength to properly honor all living entities. Only then will my aparada cease and I will chant Krishna's name in pure ecstasy. So in other words, he combines these two things consistently in his Chaitanya Shikshamrita and other scriptures.
This is a small story. Maybe I said it before, but one time I was in Montreal, and the devotees were discussing in the temple room about having a printing press in Montreal. And then, as we were speaking about that, it was interesting because one person came with a French translation of that book that he sent to McGill. So we saw, wow, this is a confirmation. Bhaktivinoda Thakur himself is coming and approving this idea of having a printing press in Montreal. So and now they have in the book room in Montreal, they have a big stock, like a good stock of this book in French. This book. This local. The devotee made a translation, a French translation. Yeah.
That I think Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati told that that Bhaktivinoda Thakur is an expansion of Gadadhar Pandit. Because even the disappearance days is one day, both disappeared at the same day. So just I remember the detail. I think he said that somewhere. Yeah. Kamala Manjari. Coincided the day.
Oh.
Really?
that
Guru Kishore Das Babaji's death disappearance coincided with Swarupa Damodar's day. So, same thing.